The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. It's a shade before 8 o'clock, KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford. Let's do a couple of emails of the day. Emails of the day and air is sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. And they have an in-house lab, which is really cool. When you need a crown done, because now, it used to be that you'd get one of those, I need a crown. All right, we're going to grind your tooth up there, and then you're going to have to wait maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks for that out-of-town lab to do it. Nope, a lot of times they can do it while you wait. Sit down, wait half hour, something like that. They grind you up and shape you a perfect crown, and works really well. In fact, I have one of them in my mouth, okay? CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com, okay? And Jerry writes me over the weekend, and Jerry the Bull says, "Hey, Bill, Fox News bias expelled. I was just watching a short excerpt of Polish Minister Sikorski on Fox News discussing the Russian-Ukraine conflict, and he states that Russia has probably lost 100,000 men, which I believe is accurate from what I've heard. However, the Fox News host never asked how many Ukrainians have been killed, which I've heard is around 600,000, six times more than the Russians. The interview was painted as Russia is losing this conflict and Putin is in jeopardy. Yes, even Fox can be biased if the truth threatens the financial support to Ukraine and the profits of the military-related corporations." All right, Bill, there was a line, this is coming from Patrick. Patrick writes, "Bill, there was a line expressed on the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins show that was unacknowledged. The line was, the Harris campaign realized that she was never going to get the black male vote. When you read that line aloud, it changes a bit in your mind. Both definitions seem to be true. She was never going to get the black male vote, and she was never going to get the black male vote." I see the play on the words. That's where you're coming at, right? All right. I appreciate that. Butch writes, "Hey, Bill, I hear the ads on the radio about that train in Garibaldi." Yeah, they opened the Oregon Coast Railway. "And I had Reno Air Race friends come in from the UK, come to visit Labor Day weekend. And when they told me that they were coming, we were in smoke. So instead of them driving down from PDX, then going to the coast, I suggested meeting in Garibaldi. I would not go very far for the train ride, but my goal was the Evergreen Air Museum. We did go for a train ride, and it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. But anyway, the Spruce Goose over at the Evergreen Air deal was amazing. Also, a Tillamook Air Museum. But we didn't have time, and the seafood was great, too." Butch and Gold Hill. So the seafood on the coast was pretty good, eh, Butch? By the way, anytime I go to the coast, I always get the filet of fish at McDonald's because the seafood is so fresh out there on the coast. It's much better. Okay, I'm having fun with you there. Yeah, you can. The filet of fish, right? You sit there, and you eat the filet of fish at the McDonald's in Brookings, and you can practically hear the seagulls, right? Just having fun with you there. The email, Bill, at BillMyersShow.com. A couple minutes after 8, we'll catch up on Town Hall News here in just a moment. And then Dr. Dennis Powers. We're going to go back in history and visit the Biscuit Fire of 2002. It's worth remembering.
At Siskiyou Pump Service and Rotary.
In the upper 90s. This is Kevin Lawless for NBC 5 News, your place.
6 minutes after 8, and standing by, Dr. Dennis Powers, where past meets present. We have that coming up here in a couple of minutes. I'm really looking forward to that, right after the Kim Komando digital update, where you always find out, what's the latest ripoff that these scammers are trying to do and how to avoid it. Seems to be many of her topics. It's why it's so worth listening to her show. Saturdays tend to make that 7 to 10 here on KMED, okay? Lynn Barton is an advisor, Medicare advisor, actually, over at Sky Park Insurance. You hear her call the show. Just a great addition to Sky Park Insurance. Sky Park Insurance, of course, with Steve Yancey, doing all that great work and helping people save money. Well, Lynn works the side for Medicare. And if you have Medicare Advantage or you have a prescription drug plan, you may not realize that the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed by the Biden administration made some huge changes that will affect these plans next year. Now, some of them are good. Some of them are really bad. All right. And so I want to make sure that you don't get affected by the really bad and that you take advantage of the really good one way or the other. So coming up a week from tomorrow, next Tuesday, you can get informed on this annual enrollment by heading over to Lynn Barton's complimentary Medicare Update Seminar. So it's next Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. It's October 1st at the Phoenix Library. You do need to RSVP. So if you could call Lynn at Sky Park, 541-499-0958, 541-499-0958, or you can email Lynn, L-Y-N-N, at skyparkins.com, or you can find Lynn over at skyparkins.com, too. Okay, so remember, a week from tomorrow, get informed on all the changes in the prescription drug and Medicare Advantage plans with Sky Park. This hour of my show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
The model year end close.
Here, KMED in Grants Pass on 105.9 K290 AF Rogue River in South Jackson County on 106.7 K294 AS Ashland.
Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law at Southern Oregon University, and we appreciate you being back. By the way, find out more about the doc at DennisPowersBooks.com. Dennis, always good having you on. How are you, my friend?
Always a pleasure, Bill. You know, for all the years we've been doing this, I look forward to it still now because of the fact of I always learn something every time we chat.
All right. Well, let's learn about something that we may not have known or remembered about the Biscuit Fire of 2002, 22 years ago at about this time. And I know that a lot of our minds have been captured by what happened with Almeda over there, you know, 4 years ago. That happened, that four-year anniversary. But, boy, I recall the biscuit. I remember the pall hanging over here in Southern Oregon for a long, long time from that. What happened? Why don't you tell us the story?
Well, you know, same thing. And I can remember watching the winds whip the Alameda fire, and I just went right back to the biscuit fire and other fires that we've had. But this is the one that's the largest one ever in Oregon modern-day history. In mid-July, as you pointed out, 2002, Bill, southwestern Oregon had really endured about 2 months of drought and a searing heat wave. Now, the forecasted weather was for 105 degrees, and the Illinois Valley forests were really dry as kindling. Long story short, perfect time and storm for dry lightning strikes. And that's amazing because that's where it's so hot, my friend, that the heat evaporates the rain before it reaches the ground. So we had then a series of electro storms, which we've even seen this past summer, with over 575 lightning strikes that hit southern Oregon.
Yeah, fortunately, a lot of the lightning strikes that we were getting this particular summer were coming in more humid, rainier patterns, which is a lot easier to take. A lot easier. We like those, you know.
Good point. Excellent point. And when that it hit, the first air spotted fire, that firefighting efforts failed, and then a second one the next day was stopped, and this was spotted. And this is built on steep, rocky slopes. This is the time when it was they say is the second worst fire season in 50 years. And so you had a lot of the nation's firefighting manpower was tied down elsewhere. Now, the reason why it was called the Biscuit Fire was because that's where the two fires now joined together at Oregon's Biscuit Creek. But this 20-mile wall of flames, this is what we have to picture. I've seen pictures like all of us had, and when I think of the Alameda Fire, I said, oh, this is really a problem. You know, now and also then. But what happened was, is within 2 weeks, Bill, one of the fronts blasted through two-thirds the size of Portland in only 90 minutes. And
wow.
I think, my friend, yeah, we can remember. I remember I had actually two times. One time on this fire, I was driving to Crescent City to do some research, and I remember the fires were lapping on both sides, and I was one of the last cars that was allowed through because I had no idea how fast it was going at that time. And the second thing is I had headed out of Oregon, and I was flying back in the clouds of smoke. And when I got into Medford, you couldn't see anything.
Yep.
It was like a mushroom cloud that was 30,000 feet into the sky. So you had, by this time, evacuation notices being issued for the entire Illinois Valley.
Yeah, including Selma, Kirby, Cave Junction, O'Brien. They were all part of that. at the time. And, you know, my memory's a little light on a lot of this stuff now, because it's like so many fires have happened year after year after year. But the Biscuit was a special one, you know, so to speak, right?
It was on a number of fronts. By early August, you had over 7,000 firefighters operating from three main camps near Cave Junction, Brookings, and Gold Beach. Mm-hmm. And it was international. You had them from all over, numbers of different countries.
And really, their fighting of the fire was about setting backfires, really, and doing fire breaks. There was really no controlling the massiveness of this particular blaze, was there?
Absolutely right, because it was burning out of control 2 months after the lightning strikes. It burned completely until the winter rains came, which is December 31st. But there's a number of things that came in, other than how bad the fire was and how it got out of control, was there's a big controversy, and Bill is very controversial even to this day, as to why the fires couldn't have been put out the first day. And one of the allegations was that California and Oregon fire supervisors had not communicated as well they should. And they had a later GAO report really stated that rapid responses were stretched thin, but many forests were choked with fuel. This is what we're seeing now. And the other thing, which is number three, was that despite court rulings for the Forest Service and the salvaged logging only involved, Bill, less than 1% of the fire-killed timber, you had the protesters, the activists that came out and blocked logging trucks, and it was over whether or not you could open remote roadless areas for even salvage logging. We're having these issues even now. All those years back, we've seen the same thing, where it's burn, baby, burn. Can't have roads in there. Environmentalists, especially in the Biden administration, have done a woeful job for the rest of us in terms of saying let it burn. And so it's one of those things where when I remember seeing my friend the Alameda fire from up near the Ashland City border and watching it whip through as fast as they did, just thinking about what happened then and what happens now, and we still do not have effective solutions because of the fact of wokeness.
I don't really know if they, under the current political regime, if you can get much of a solution. Now, going back to the Biscuit, though, you had talked about there had been some GAO reports on this, and I'm kind of forgetting a bit about this now. Did they ever go into the 1995 wildland forest policy that has essentially lightning strikes being allowed to burn? You know, if there's a, you know, because there's a burn plan on practically all this federal land, and these areas were choked with fuel, as you like mentioned. And I know that Jackson County ended up coming up with an ordinance or coordination that we will not allow those kind of burnings for land management purposes. Now, that might not have applied to something out there in the Calmeopsis, you know, because it's out there within pure federal land. But what are you thinking, you know, about this? Did they ever really dig into that policy, which is that the lightning strikes happen, oh, it's natural, and we have a burn plan on this land, and oh, we need to burn it for, you know, to restore the forest. You know how that goes, Doc. This is the stuff we talk about all the time here.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And actually, what it was that on the Fed side, we didn't do anything wrong. You know, the rapid responses were stretched thin.
Well, I'm just thinking, though, that a rapid response they could have put about early was probably held back, because you just wanted to let it burn. There is a let it burn attitude a lot of times, especially when you're out in areas that don't have any people living there.
Yeah, that is certainly part of it. The other thing, though, is that, and trust me, it is still controversial even to this day as to what could have been done better. And if you get into the facts, there really is an issue as to what happened in terms of the communication. But on the other hand, jobs in terms of firefighting control, whether it's California or Oregon or whatever it was, it's still rattling around now as to the fact of what really did happen, and it is still very controversial, not to mention that the salvage logging, less than 1% of the fire-killed timber, went ahead and did what it is. And I'll just share one thing, if I may. Here in Ashland, up in the watershed, where the reservoir is for the city's water, they were doing systematic logging with helicopters going in, and there were no protests, zero. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that what learned people are saying is that there was a deal cut with the activists, and this was because there was some, let's say, about $600,000 of income that the city of Ashland was going to get. I don't know what the costs were. But this whole thing is politicized to an extreme.
Well, so the Ashland activists don't want Ashland burned, but they're happy to have the Illinois Valley burned if it's about, you know, for a political point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because the fact is that when you come into it, people are driven by their self-interest. And what happens, though, is the fact that here in Ashland, with its very liberal bent, you do have the situation where people can cut deals with activists, city council members, and things like that, whether it's the homeless or whether it's salvage logging here in the reservoir area. And you never hear a word about it. You've got to see it. I used to walk up there and say, this is amazing. A number of us would just sit there and watch silently as the helicopters would go ahead and land in one area and get, these cut logs and then move them out. Now, they normally did it in the morning.
Yeah, but a helicopter, you would never see a helicopter out there in the Biscuit back at the time. I remember that. Nothing.
That's exactly right. Now, in all fairness, part of the problem that happened was that after it got to a certain point, only air tankers could stop it. Mm-hmm. But the 10 of the Oregon tankers were already fighting fires in eastern and central Oregon. And so the small contingent of firefighters, this is in the early days, was forced to fall back as the flames really, as you pointed out so well, threatened the near 20,000 residents in these Illinois Valley towns, Selma, Kirby, Cave Junction, O'Brien, you know, these wonderful towns you drive through on the way of getting to Crescent City.
All right, very good. Dr. Dennis Powers, the Biscuit Fire of 2002, that's today's profile. And we'll be right back and talk a little bit more of that. By the way, Doc, shifting gears on you, you've been keeping an eye on the price of gold lately. Have you noticed that?
You know, it's amazing. And let me listen, because the fact that now they're saying, how high can it go?
Yeah, $2,630. And you look at the chart of gold, and it's just been seesawing up. You know, back in February, we were at 2,000. We're now at 2,630. And gold has been joined by silver to a certain extent. Silver's at about $31 an ounce right now. Needless to say, I don't know. Do you think this is more about the potential for a world war going on here, and gold is kind of that fear trade? They're looking at maybe instability going on, or might this be an example of they don't have control of the budget? There's no way they have any control of the budget, no matter who's president in 2025. What do you think about that, Doc?
I think those are two of the factors, and they're very strong ones. A third one is interest rates, because to hold gold, and especially with the large hedge funds, mm-hmm. When they borrow against it, right now you have an easing of the monetary policy to where it's not as expensive.
Yeah, they took a half point cut, and they're talking about maybe some more coming up in December. That is not indicative of strong dollar times there. And so gold is reacting appropriately. And yeah, this is part of our sponsor pitch here on Jay Austin & Company, Gold and Silver Buyers. But you'd rather buy gold a few minutes early than 10 minutes too late, okay? And even when you're looking at this price, boy, There are the central. When you see, when I read that the central banks are buying gold hand over fist, that to me tells me that they understand what's really going on, because these are the big money people. When they're buying the gold hand over fist, as much as you can, you know, truck it and get it into their vaults, they're looking for some real assets and preservation of wealth. And this is what the gold and silver is about. We're trying to preserve some wealth for you. We, the little folks, as it were. Talk to Jay Austin at 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass, 482-3715, one of my oldest sponsors. They're big fans of you having it in your possession, that you put it where you want it, not necessarily putting it where the government might want it. Because, you know, really, you know, if there ends up being the end times of finances, eventually the government comes looking for everything. They did it once, right? 827. So talk to Jay Austin today. Call 482-3715. Ashland, Grants Pass, jayaustinbrokers.com, fortunereserve.com.
Hi, it's John at Welburn's Weapons. The only thing better than shooting is shooting with a suppressor. Welburn's is Southern Oregon's suppressor headquarters, stocking models from Silencer Code, Dead Air, Griffin Armament, Rugged, Q, Thunderbeast, and many more. And we can order practically any suppressor on the market. Check in with us for monthly incentives to save on suppressors, too. Come see the suppressor experts. Welburn's Weapons on Crater Lake Highway, just south of White City.
It's gutter season. The phones are ringing at Fontana Roofing's custom gutter division after the last downpour. We've been busy custom fabricating robust gutters on site in a choice of 30 colors guaranteed to survive the weight of falling water and space dust. So if your gutters need to be repaired or replaced, give Fontana a call before the wet weather sets in. We also install gutter covers too to keep those pesky leaves.
We add a little odd.
Well, it's time to take a walk on the paranormal side.
A dash of strange.
Energy that transcends time.
A cup of peculiar.
Something that goes on even after the physical body's dead.
Mix in some bizarre.
What is the paranormal world about?
And you have a recipe for coast to coast. Go ahead. Have some. Late nights. Coast to coast AM.
People do like to be scared.
Coast to coast AM on KMED. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED. And you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Before we return to Present with Dr. Powers, let's talk a bit more about the biscuit fire. Steve, you had a story going back to 2002, that big blaze. And I guess kind of going into the scammy nature of all of this, I'd love to get your take on it. Go right ahead. You're with Dr. Powers.
Okay, we had a contractor that worked for Double D Lumber. Double D was gone by that time, but this guy was pretty well out of business. He had a D8 cat. And the Forest Service called him up and said, hey, we need your cat. Do you still have it? He said, yeah, but it's no good. It's wore out. It won't do anything. And they asked him, can you get it on a lowboy? And he said, yes. So anyway, they put it on a lowboy. They hauled it out to Kirby. They called Caterpillar. They completely rebuilt the machine, the engine, new clutch, hydraulics. They even replaced the wear parts on the blade and the cable on the winch. Never took it off the lowboy. He made $24,000 and got a completely rebuilt cat, and they never used the thing.
Why didn't they use it? You know?
They didn't want to. It was all about spending money. It wasn't about using the cat to put the fire out.
Wait, what do you think about that, Dennis?
I am very happy. Steve, thank you for calling in, because that's just a number, one of the instances that came in on this. It, you know, as I mentioned, it is still controversial as what was happening. I like that story because it makes a lot of sense with some of the other ones I've heard. So in any event, it's just one of those things where you see, you got to take a look at what happens before. And guess what? My friends, you're saying, you know, it could happen now.
All right. By the way, is this still Steve or did someone else take his place? Good morning. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Francine.
Hey, Francine. Hey, you're on with Dr. Powers. What are you thinking?
Oh, thank you. I was wondering, in the talk about the dozer and stuff, I had heard at the time of the fire that they could have done made a really good fire break, but they were, because of ecological reasons, they were told they cannot bring the dozers up to clear or they were held back at a certain point. I can't quite remember how that went, but what do you know about that?
Well, the problem was the fact that this is really, it was very steep, rocky slopes, and you had a number of problems in terms of getting equipment there. And all the way through, you also had, this was a very bad fire season.
But if you could get it in there, were there restrictions on, you know, not permitting some heavy equipment to go in places where there was actually needed to put a fire break in? Like, I think, what Francine's alluding to.
Yeah, on those specifics, there's a number of areas that go in there. And in terms of regulations, all I know is this, in terms of all the research that we did on it, is that it was such bad terrain. It got to a point where cats and things like that wouldn't work, but you couldn't, and only air tankers could stop it.
And then the air tankers were in use elsewhere.
Already in use fighting fires elsewhere.
Okay. All right. Very good. Francine, I appreciate the call. So it looks like, yeah, but kind of. Okay. It's 8:32. Hey, Doc, let's catch up with some news, and then we'll shift to the present here now. Got some new polling out on the presidential election. We can talk about that. And some various other news on your mind here. We'll kick it all around. Coming up.
Sounds like a winner.
8:32, KMED, KBXG.
Power outages are becoming more common. Patriot Electric can size you with the correct generator.
Lithia Body and Paint on Bullock Road in Medford.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
By the way, we are back with Dr. Dennis Powers, where past meets present. And Dennis, meet Brad Bennington with Dr. Powers. You wanted to weigh in one more time on the biscuit or firefighting in general, Brad? Now, go ahead.
Yeah. So Oregon used to do such a great job fighting fires. You know, when I was a kid, get the fire, everybody drop what they're doing, put the fire out. It's the way we used to roll. Management, and I hear you talking about management, the biggest firefighting airplane ever built was a 747. It was done by the same people at the Evergreen Air Museum up there in Oregon. And tell me if I'm wrong on this, but what I recall is that even though we had the biggest firefighting airplane ever built, Governor Brown never allowed it to be used on any of the forest fires in Oregon that it was available for. Now, this is what I remember. I might be mistaken, but I don't think I am.
I think that was true, that was not really called in by Governor Brown. But I think part of it was that it was not necessarily best suited for the mountainous fires here, Brad. Is that something that you recall, Dr. Powers? I know that Lars was big into that topic a number of years ago.
Yeah, this is an excellent point. I recall the same. And it also shows the panic that was going on, once this fire was out of control as it was, and if it wasn't for a wind shift about a month and a half afterwards, you could have had that fire just burning up towards Grants Pass. Mm. So it was one of those ones where it's still controversial. We still remember it. I just wish that we would have more Salem and Biden, but of course, that's probably never going to happen, would be able to take a look at what's needed to effectively fire control, especially when the activists are really running the program in terms of far-left policies.
Well, still, I mean, Brad, you understand that nothing really changes unless you get probably a change of the senators, the state or the U.S. senators here on the West Coast are very much in favor of let it burn and not really solving much of the problem. Would you agree with us on that so far?
Management matters, and we need better management, that's for sure.
All right. Hey, Brad, I appreciate the call. Thanks for that. You know something, Dr. Powers? I don't think we've ever had an Elvis update on the show with you. Are you ready for an Elvis update here?
I am. That, along with chickens being used in San Francisco, I'm ready.
Okay. Well, first things first, we have a political Elvis movement. And I had a listener that wrote me about this and said, is it true that Donald Trump says he's greater than Elvis and draws bigger crowds than the rock and roll star?
She moves her hips up to her fingertips.
Yes, he did say that over the weekend, apparently.
And when she starts to
And he suggests that the major disadvantage that he has, Dr. Powers, is that he doesn't have a guitar. So he was in, I don't know. I actually had, some people are saying, what, bigger than Elvis? And this reminds me a little bit of back when I was a kid and John Lennon was talking about, you know, the Beatles is bigger than Jesus or something like that. Remember they were burning Beatles records back when you were probably a kid, Dr. Powers?
Oh, you betcha.
Yeah.
And Judy and I were watching the Gutfeld show when Donald Trump was on there, and he comes across really as a real person. He says what he thinks, and instead of being button-up socialism, such as what we're seeing with the chameleon and Biden,
yeah.
It's refreshing.
Yeah, but on Wednesday, he did suggest that that he draws bigger crowds. Now, I actually had this person. Let me see if I can find it. I think there was. Oh, yeah, here it is. Kathy saying, Bill, a friend of mine sent me a video of President Trump saying he's better than Elvis. I'm a far-right Republican. I voted Republican all my life, but I may have to sit this one out. Really? Kathy, you would set this one out because Trump claims he's bigger than Elvis? I was wondering if somebody pulled an AI or if President Trump actually believes he's greater than Elvis. I'll try to find the video and send it to you. It is true. It is true.
These days, Bill, you're absolutely right, because the crowds that he's drawing versus the made-up ones that they're running on CNN with the chameleon, it could very well be. And thank goodness, you know, I tell you, if Trump doesn't win, the Bush Republicans are going to lose a lot of members.
So, Kathy, don't sit this one out, okay? Even though, we can sit around there and have a good time and argue about whether Trump is as big as the rock and roll star up there in heaven. Maybe he's too big. But, he did say that. But I think this is just having a little bit of fun, you know, out there. Don't take it too seriously. And the one big advantage that Trump has over Elvis is that Trump is still alive. Well, of course, other people claim that that Elvis is still alive. He'd be pretty old right now. Let's see, how old would Elvis be right now? 1935. He was born the same year as my father. So
kidding.
Yeah, he would have been. And my father's no longer with us.
He's 89.
Yeah, he'd be 89. Yeah, Elvis would have been 89 today. So at some point, the Elvis in the 7-Eleven parking lot stories will end up going away, I guess, just because of that. Unless he has the globalist juice, you know, the stuff that the Klaus Schwabs end up tanking up on. Because you notice how the bad people of the world, like George Soros, they live forever? Isn't that fascinating sometimes? You ever think about that?
Well, and also the fact is that the people like Soros are revolutionaries.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, I mean, you know, you could draw parallels of dictators in the past, but the whole thing is the fact that part of the reason is that people take pot shots at those that feel differently, such as the Republicans at the softball game.
Yeah.
Trump twice, Reagan.
But remember, when Republicans... No, doctor. When Republicans get shot at, though, it's Republicans' fault. It's because of the dangerous rhetoric. You know, it just enrages. It's sort of like, the old Popeye deals when, all you had to do was shove spinach into Popeye's mouth, and then he became violent and ultra strong. That's what happens with a leftist. You say the wrong thing, and it's like verbal spinach to them. And then they go out and get violent. They start,
and the attacks where mm-hmm. conservatives and independents are more likely to go ahead and to say, well, why don't we talk about it? And they're then going, and the far left is calling you F words.
Yeah, it's an interesting time that where we find ourselves right now, but definitely time to saddle up. Now, I don't know if you saw the New York Times this morning, Doc, but Donald Trump has pulled ahead of Kamala Harris in Arizona, apparently leading in tight races in Georgia and North Carolina. This according to a Time Siena poll this morning that was just released, and it was taken from September 17th, 21. So it's actually pretty current stuff. 2 days ago is when they finished it up.
And that's very encouraging. On the other side, to add to what you're saying in terms of polls and the viciousness of the oligarchs, is that in the battleground states such as Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin and Arizona, actually, I beg your pardon, in the Rust Belt of Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, you have polls that are different where the chameleon is ahead by a bit and mm-hmm. he's trying to go. And my concern, my friend, I like what's happening there. But I'm very concerned about the dirty tricks, what the oligarchs are doing to stay in power, to prop up like they did Biden.
President Trump has to continue running as if he's losing. He really does. And
yes.
What I wanted to ask you, though, is that he ended up turning down an October 23rd debate that Kamala agreed to and saying that it was too late. Do you agree with that Trump strategy of not doing a second debate?
Absolutely.
Why?
And the reason is, and you're right, the reasoning is what is important. We saw what happened with ABC, where the whole thing was cooked. Fact-checking was totally only in terms of Trump. And Kamala was given a great pass.
Do you think that, did you read what the whistleblower said? The whistleblower who had released the information about ABC's internals about how they were going to do fact-checking, and they were going to do all this kind of stuff, and it was released before the debate and was sent out there. Do you think it's ever going to go anyplace?
Oh, and it won't, because the drive-by media, which is complicit, this is just a fact, the drive-by media, which is complicit in this whole takeover, because of the way the Biden administration and the feds have been buying advertising to prop them up. You can see them. You can see that. That this is a fight for the soul of the country, and it's an unfair fight because you have the elite. You know, you can name all the actors and actresses that get on board and say, oh, Camellia and Weitz is the best ones.
Well, I know that I'm ready to change my vote because Billie Eilish came out over the weekend, you know, the 19, 20-year-old singer, and said that she's voting for Kamala. So I'm going to have to change my vote because I know that I go to mentally ill young women, you know, for my political advice. So,
you know, I like that because it really is true. And the way that that we can get through this is to laugh about the idiocy of what's happening on the far left. And that's what's done, you know, by talk show hosts who are trying to navigate.
Yeah. But the thing is, I don't think that necessarily laughing at the Kamala campaign is necessarily going to help it, though, because my concern is that Kamala's values have not changed. I absolutely agree with her when she says that her values haven't changed. But what she's telling the voters has changed, which tells me that it's a pretty cynical process, in my opinion, the way that is going on. And quite often, I think Trump is talking about the wrong things on the campaign trails. Would you agree with me or disagree with me? Sometimes he spends too much time talking about the stuff that doesn't matter. It's like, to me, really what we should be hearing, are you truly better off today than you were 4 years ago? And what is it like when you go into the grocery store? What is it like when you end up having, 20,000 people from Haiti dropped into your town, Springfield, Ohio? You know, those kind of things, because there's a little bit of that going on all over the country here. And it's and Kamala's acting as if she wasn't part of the problem, like she wasn't part of that administration of the last 4 years.
Yeah, I agree. And the reason is that in terms of laughing at the far left, that's one way of deflecting, but being committed to put in money and going ahead and volunteering and watching polls, and most of your listeners are hardworking Americans who are running their own businesses, and they don't have the time to do it. So you're absolutely right on those points. The concern I have are the dirty tricks that will happen. In terms of Trump, let me share this with you if I could, my friend. What really concerns me, we have one person, Trump, tried to be assassinated twice.
Mm-hmm.
He has been taking all this abuse. Another lawsuit just thrown in by another Delaware judge in Biden's home place that has to do with the big problem of his social media company, and just said that one of the individuals, one of the companies, my friend, that were into this social media spinoff, if you will, was owed more stock. So they're trying to strangle him in terms of what can be done even on his social media. I'm also reading about Elon Musk with Isaacson, mm-hmm. and to see what happened with Twitter underneath Biden and the problems that were caused by the far left and by that with that is just absolutely amazing.
And the dirty trick machine has not been vanquished from 2020, okay? We know that's not the case, all right? You know, there's an interesting little note. You even talked about the assassination attempts. I wanted to make sure people knew about this, that court document, this from Epoch Times this morning, Doc, a court document submitted by federal prosecutors this morning, just a little while ago, showing that Ryan Ralph, that suspect, did write handwritten note that said this was an assassination attempt on the former president. So this was one of those things when you've had so many of the left-wing media talking about it as a so-called assassination attempt. I would dare say that we can take this to the bank now, just so you know. Okay?
Well, it's another excellent example of the way of how biased this is against being the drive-by media. The Times, the Chronicle, CNN, MSNBC, all these are in terms of looping around and trying to fool everyone, lull people to sleep, attack Trump. I've never seen this in all my decades. These are excellent points you're bringing up, my friend.
All right. Hey, Doc, anything else you wanted to touch on? There was something weird in the news that I forgot what it was that you wanted to talk about. There was something bizarre out there, even more bizarre than, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm bigger than Elvis now, Trump. But what was it?
This is a good way of our going in towards the end, because the news, and I saw the videos, the San Francisco police was using a custom chicken in a chicken outfit at a crosswalk that would make a motion like the chicken was going through the crosswalk.
Uh-huh.
And drivers would speed bill right through it.
They would speed past the chicken, right?
Yeah. And of course, they would, if they saw a police uniform there, they would certainly pick that up. But it was to catch speeding drivers, and I started laughing about this because it really was funny to watch what they're doing, and I thought very creative. And then Judy said, you know, I bet you the ACLU is going to go ahead and argue that that's entrapment.
Well, what I would ask you, though, a serious question, though, involving the, so they have the fake chickens that are being used to catch the speeding drivers, stepping into the crosswalk there in San Francisco. But I got to tell you, with as nuts as San Francisco is these days, would you stop for a fake chicken in the middle of the road?
First of all, you won't catch me in San Francisco.
Okay, point well taken. But if you were there.
Yeah, if I was, Bill, if I was there, I would be going much slower because out of plates, an Oregon plate there would be like going ahead and saying to the homeless, we got a chicken that's driving, the car. I would stop.
Yeah, but most sensible people would run the chicken over in San Francisco knowing that it's probably a scam and they're going to carjack you, okay? It's like, run the chicken. So on that note, my friend, we got to go. And so
keep your doors locked.
All right. And Elvis is back in the room. We'll see you, Doc. Thanks.
Take care.
All right. And yes. If President Trump were around, he'd probably be selling more records than Elvis right now. It is true. It is true, Kathy. 853 KMED, 99.3 KBXG, 770-5633. Whatever's on your mind, we can talk about that coming up.
If you have an appliance that's giving you...
855 and change, and you have Alan DeBoer. Alan, good to hear from you this morning. Former state senator, how are you doing today? Welcome back.
Good morning. I had to comment on the chicken at the crosswalk. I'd probably hit him because I tried to figure out why the chicken was crossing the road to start with.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, but would you agree with me, though, that things are so crazy in San Francisco that I don't know if I'd stop for much, given how many attacks have been done on people. You know, you stop for the wrong thing, and then, you know, the chicken drags you out of the car and then starts beating you for whatever reason. Maybe for disrespecting the chicken, right? Could be something like that.
Yeah, one other thing on poles. I can make a pole say whatever I want, and I think the polls that you may be seeing are trying to motivate the Democrats out to vote, because if they think that Trump's ahead in the polls, they will get a bigger turnout.
That very well could be. I appreciate your call. Thank you there, Senator. Good hearing from you. Ellen DeBoer, it is 8:56. And I got a couple minutes left. I wanted to make sure that I think this is Holly Morton, Josephine County Republican Party Chair. Is that right, Holly? Welcome.
That is correct.
Yeah, you're the one of the few people call me with a 760 area code, so I'm good with that. So tonight, Dr. Douglas Frank is at the Ann Basker Auditorium. Tell us a little bit about that in the waning minutes here, okay?
That should be an excellent visit. He's going to give us some hints on what we can do at the last minute to ensure election integrity in our county and beyond. And I had Ann Basker Hall at 6 o'clock tonight. Should be a great event. He'll be in the office today from 2 to 4, and he'll be in our office tomorrow. So people who miss that event can stop in and get a chance to meet him. He's a fascinating guy. But one comment I want to make, which I think kind of focuses on what you were talking about earlier, was that people bring in the case of Michael Sellers and so forth, people bring in other people that they have worked with that they think are fantastic. Mm-hmm. Because when you work with people that do a great job, you want them around you. So that's why people bring in people like Chris Barnett and Michael Sellers, because they do a great job.
And are you kind of alluding to the rising discontent from the other side of the political aisle, I think is what's going on here, right? A lot of discontent. There's claims of cronyism, but cronyism can also be explained away with, hey, you work with people, you know how they work, and they work well.
Well, that's my point, is that you know, when you have somebody you've worked with in the past and they did a fantastic job and you're looking for them to do something going up, the first people you call is people that you have done well that you've worked with in the past.
All right. Holly, I appreciate the update. And remember, tonight, 6 o'clock, Ann Basker Hall, Dr. Douglas Frank, okay? And he's at the Josephine County Republican Party office this afternoon, 2 to 4, if you wanted to talk about election integrity with him, too. We will catch you tomorrow. See ya.
Life's busy, and off is not an option. You need to be on the water, on the call, on the road. Life's waiting. Power on with Batteries Plus. Visit one of over 700 locations today. Getting